Well, welcome to the book of Deuteronomy. We've made it to our fifth book now in the Old Testament. And this one's got kind of a funny name, don't you think? Deuteronomy. What's even more funny than that is this term for this Hebrew book is actually a Greek term. Actually, the same thing could be said of Genesis, which is a Greek term. Exodus, which is a Greek term. Only Leviticus and Numbers are not really from Greek. So out of the Pentateuch, of the five books of the Pentateuch, three of the five books have Greek names, even though they're Hebrew books. Deuteronomy, what does Deuteronomy mean in Greek? What are the two words? Deuteros means two or second. And the latter part, nomos, is our Greek word for law. So it literally means second law. And we find that the majority of this book is a reiteration of the Mosaic law. It's really not a second law. It's not like God went and redid the Mosaic covenant of 40 years earlier. But it's actually more of a renewal of the people to that covenant. And so I use the keyword renewal for the book of Deuteronomy. God's not saying anything here that is, let's say, different in any substantial way to what we find in Exodus. But we do find a reiteration of the things in Exodus with a few, let's say, minor things, minor changes. For example, the Ten Commandments of Exodus 20 are repeated in Deuteronomy 5. And they're basically the same, but there's one key difference on the fourth commandment. Whereas in Exodus, the Lord said, keep the Sabbath day because the Lord created the heavens and the earth in 6 days. By the way, that's a great Exodus 20, verse 11. That's a great indication of God's perspective on Genesis 1. He created the heavens and the earth in 6 days. That kind of does away with the whole idea of the gap theory. That Genesis 1, verse 1 and 2, as a prior creation, and then there's thousands or millions of years or something before the rest of Genesis being a recreation or anything like that. But the point I'm trying to bring out, I guess, is that Exodus 20, to encourage the people to follow the Sabbath, it looks back at creation. When we get to Deuteronomy, they're able to look back not only at creation, but they're actually able to look back at the redemption under Egypt. And so the motivation for obeying the Sabbath in Deuteronomy 5 is follow the Sabbath day, for the Lord redeemed you from Egypt. So Exodus looks back at creation. Deuteronomy looks back at redemption. But what they both have in common is they're talking about the same Mosaic law. The people have 40 years by this time of disobeying it. And the young people in the wilderness have seen their parents be bad examples. And they need to improve upon what their parents have done. And so there is a renewal of the Mosaic covenant. So that's the theme I think we find here in the book of Deuteronomy. We find actually the most important verse to Judaism in this book. So it must be the key verse because it's the key verse of Judaism. Deuteronomy 6, 4 to 5. Hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength. That verse, those two verses, are at the front of every synagogue. It's called the Shema, S-H-E-M-A. And the Hebrew word Shema, it means hear. They call it the hear, H-E-A-R. Listen is the idea. Hebrews are really big on just using the very first word of something important and then have that word as representative of the rest. They do that for Genesis. Bereshit is the very first word, in the beginning. So they call the book in the beginning. Leviticus. The Lord said. That's what they call the book of Leviticus. Etc. So they call this the Shema, the hear or the listen. And it's the fundamental teachings, I guess I would say, the two fundamental teachings of Judaism. Do you see them in the verse? What are those two fundamental teachings? Number one, that God is one, which means what? What does it mean that God is one? There's no Trinity? No, there's only one God. There's God. Believe in monotheism. That's a basic tenet of Islam. Monotheism. One God. In a world where, well, frankly, in their world, nobody believed in one God. This is before you have Islam and Christianity. And this is God saying, Judaism is going to be the first of the monotheistic religions, the great monotheistic religions. Now we have other ones that have joined as well. There's only one God. And then, because there's only one God, you should love him. Interesting. It doesn't say, because there's only one God, you should obey him, or you should believe in him. Obviously, we should do those as well. But this verse connects the fact that there's one God with a love for that God. This is really, really good for us as New Testament believers. Because we often set up a false dichotomy between us and the Old Testament Israelites. We say, well, we have a personal relationship with God. They didn't back then. And they, whoever taught you that? Who taught me that? That they didn't have a personal relationship with God. They had, God appeared to them directly. God appeared to them at Mount Sinai, and they heard the voice of the Lord. In fact, they were so afraid of it, they said, Moses, can you just listen for us? Speaking of Shema, can you go up and talk to him? This is too frightening to have him talk to us face to face. But they covenanted to have that relationship with him. It was scarier, I guess. Frankly, I think it'd probably be as scary for you and me if God appeared to us and spoke to us with a thunderous voice, even though we have this relationship with him as well. But because there's only one God, love that one God with heart and mind and strength. When they say heart, they actually were referring, they thought of people as thinking from their heart. That's why when we get in the New Testament, it says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, your mind as well. You know, we do need to love the Lord with our mind. It's not just an emotional thing. Our heart, our soul, our strength. So the kingdom idea here is Moses exhorted Israel to renew obedience to the Sinai covenant so as to function as God's kingdom representatives in Canaan for blessing to the whole world. Now, a lot of good it would be for Israel to go into Canaan, to the promised land, and then be like all the other nations. I mean, what good would that do? They were to be a kingdom of priests there, a nation that was different from the other nations, that would draw the other nations to understand who this true God is and want to come in relationship with him. The invitation was open to the others who were not part of Israel to become part of Israel and believe in this Lord. That's what we see in actually the next book, in Joshua. We see that Rahab accepts that invitation. Rahab places her trust in the God of Israel. She turns away. And so anyway, summary statement is that Moses preaches, this whole book is basically sermons, okay? Moses preaches and records sermons which expound the law in order to encourage Israel's new generation in renewal of the covenant at Sinai, resulting in blessing in Canaan for obedience, not cursing for disobedience. In his audience, As Moses was preaching the book of Deuteronomy, he only had two people in that audience that were over age 60, Joshua and Caleb. And of course, Moses was over 60. But everybody else had been born in the wilderness, or they were 20 years or younger at the Exodus. So nobody's over age 60. And yet, being the younger ones, they also need to acknowledge that the Lord, who is the Lord God of their parents, is also their Lord God as well. This is really a good book for all of us who grow up in godly homes, Christian homes, to ask the question, am I doing that? Did my parents really pass it on to me, and have I really taken a hold of it? And am I really renewing the covenant that my parents made? That's what we're talking about here for the book of Deuteronomy. Some of you can relate to that. How many of you can relate to that? How many from Christian homes? You grew up in Christian homes. No, really, raise your hand. Really, raise your hands. Okay. Guys, I can't believe that 5% of you grew up in Christian homes. I'm only seeing just a handful of hands. Just a handful of hands. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 of you? 5 out of 33? Wow. Okay. Well, I can relate to the majority of you because I didn't grow up in a Christian home. I was way behind everybody else. I didn't know who Jonah was at age 14, you know. I had no idea who he was. I thought he was a friend at school or something like that. I hadn't met yet. But when somebody was telling me about Jonah, I said, no, I haven't met him. But those of us who grew up knowing about these sort of things, we know the importance of making that commitment ourselves. I'm glad to see that the 5 of you have done that. So covenant is a big deal in this book. The theme of covenant, and I summarize it this way. God, he's the suzerain. That means the greater king. God spoke via Moses as his mediator to renew Israel. Israel is called the vassal or the servant nation. So it's the greater king telling the servant nation. That's basically what we have in this book. He tells in the Mosaic covenant. And he predicted Israel's exile, their repentance, and their return in the land covenant. We see this in Deuteronomy 30, verses 1 to 10. Seriously, this book really does say that. It talks about Israel getting kicked out of the land that they haven't even entered yet. They're on their way to Canaan. They're just looking at the promised land from across the Jordan River. They're looking over at it. They haven't even gotten in there yet. And this book says, you're going to get in there and you're going to disobey the Lord and God's going to kick you out. You're going to be in exile. But he's also going to bring you back. And we find that, especially in Deuteronomy 30, verses 1 to 10, that we'll look at in a minute. Redemption theme is very, very much here as well. In Israel's foundation of love for and obedience to God, that's what we read in the Shema, chapter 6. That love for and obedience to God to experience deliverance in the land actually parallels a Christian's need to love God as the basic motivation for redemption from sin and successful living today. So Luke 10:27 draws on this idea of redemption that we find in the book of Deuteronomy. Hey, don't you need to love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul, and strength, and all that, you know? Of course you do. Why? What's your basic responsibility to the Lord? If you grew up in a legalistic home, you might think that your basic responsibility to God is to obey Him. But really, your basic responsibility to God is to love Him. Because love is going to lead to obedience. Obedience is not necessarily going to lead to love. And I'm not against obedience here. I'm just saying the foundation of our relationship with God has to be, well, He loves us. And our foundation needs to be responding in love to Him. We see the Messiah also noted in this book. The promise of prophets like Moses, Deuteronomy 18, 14 to 22, who instructed Israel in God's laws, was fulfilled in many Old Testament prophets, but ultimately fulfilled in Jesus. And we find that in the New Testament, in John, in Acts, in Matthew, other places, Jesus is referred to as the new Moses. He does the same things Moses did, but even in a greater sense. Moses provided bread for the people because the manna came under Moses' leadership. Jesus ends up multiplying 5 loaves, two fish and 5 loaves of bread. He's really portraying himself as the greater Moses, if you will. And so we find the renewal of the Mosaic Covenant here in the book of Deuteronomy. And it talks about 3 basic things. In these 4 sermons, some would say 5 sermons, depends where you make the divisions. Some would say maybe 3 sermons. But I'm going to keep it simple and just say that in the 3 major areas here, it talks about what God has done by looking back at the history of especially the Exodus and the wilderness wanderings. What God expects in the center section of the book. This is the legal aspect where we find God saying, do this and don't do this. In the civil way, and the social laws, and the ceremonial laws, and especially with the Ten Commandments. And then thirdly, what God will do in the final prophetic section of the book, where it looks to the future and it looks to Israel's exile out of the land and their return back to the land. So past faithfulness, present love laws, and future hope might be another way to say it. And within those 3 major divisions, you have other minor divisions that would talk about different types of laws in the center section. Cursings and blessings in chapters 27 and 28, the land covenant, 29 to 30. And then there's 4 chapters of the leadership transition from Moses over to Joshua. The book takes a place about 1 month on the plains of Moab. And Huddleston's acrostic Bible is a pretty good depiction of it because it shows Moses preaching to the people from the tablets. The book is a reminder to us that we need to be renewed as well. Whether you are from a Christian background or not, you still need renewal. Every one of us needs renewal. Our bodies are being renewed moment by moment. You know that, right? You have 7 layers of skin on, and that skin on the top is just dying and getting rubbed off, and other layers of skin are growing up underneath it to replace it. So I heard somewhere that our whole entire human body actually gets replaced about every 7 years. With the exception of the anvils of our ears and the hammer of our ears, our bodies have to be continually renewed because they're dying. You know, death is kind of is in us from Adam, and we need continual renewal. That's the second law of thermodynamics. Most of us are not getting healthier and stronger. There is a part of your life where you can be doing that, but on the whole scheme of life, we are all on our way to the grave. Doesn't that sound like a great positive message for today, you know? For men, you're about the healthiest in your life from about age 16 to 18. And after that, it's downhill. So by the time you get married, unless you get married around 16... which generally is not recommended, right? You're on the downhill even when you start your marriage. And everybody here who's married knows that. I was thinking of that this morning. I was trying to get out of bed. Oh, yeah. How many aches and pains am I going to have 10 years from now, 20 years from now? You know, I'm on my way to my grave. That's why I need to have my inward man renewed, because the outward body is decaying, as Paul said. But the inner man can be renewed day by day. Second law of thermodynamics means that all people kind of get run down daily. Everything is actually running down. It's moving from order to disorder. And that's why we need air and food and water, these sort of things. And you better have a plan to renew yourself, because if you don't, you're going to look worse after worse every year. My wife just posted a picture of her and me on Facebook. And I said, "Who's that old guy you're with?" You know? Never seen myself look older than that before. And of course, I haven't been older than that before. So here's the question. How can you be renewed spiritually? How can you be spiritually renewed? What is God's plan in your life and my life for continual restoration in our walk with the Lord? Most of the counseling I have with people is around this question. Whatever issue you're facing right now, how can you do some things that are different in your life that will show itself so that you actually can be spiritually renewed, even though your body is getting worse? And as we saw those three sections in the book, so I answered this question. I think Moses answers it in three different ways. And here's the first one in the first four chapters. Thank God for his faithfulness in your past. You can be renewed by looking back, looking to the past and saying, well, where has the Lord brought me so far up to this point? Isn't it a great thing to look to the past? And frankly, that's what we will do in chapel today. You will hear about the founding of Singapore Bible College. And I hope you will thank God for his faithfulness to you, because you are a product of those who have gone before you. That's what Moses does here in these first four chapters. When these people he's talking to 40 years later, many of them couldn't even understand. They weren't born 40 years previously. But he wanted them to say, thank God for how he sustained you by sustaining your parents, you know. If the parents didn't live at least for some time to be able to reproduce in the wilderness, these people he was talking to wouldn't even exist. So I hope you thank God for your parents. I hope you pray for your parents if your parents are still alive. My wife and I were praying for our parents this morning and just thanking God for what they've done in our life. Recognize what the Lord's already done for you. When we get to the center section of the book, it tells us another way to be renewed. Love God now in your present. And here's where we see the Shema, which is the key idea of the middle of Deuteronomy and the key idea of Judaism today. Sad to say, most Jews today, they would say that they really don't love the Lord. But those who attend the synagogue and are seeking to really follow the Lord, their God, they have that reminder right there in their synagogue. Whether it's a messianic synagogue or one who has not embraced Christ as Messiah, they still have the Shema up in the front, posted very prominently in a way that many Christian churches have, do this in remembrance of me, or something like that will be at the front of their church. Love God now in your present. Reaffirm your commitment to the Lord. Do you sing that song? I love you, Lord, and I lift my voice. You know that one? That's a great song just to remind God, remind yourself that you truly do love him. And then looking to the future, we find in the third part of the book the encouragement to serve God with hope in your future. God said through Moses that Israel would be turning away from the Lord in their days ahead, but that didn't mean that the listeners themselves had to be among them. Even if you know, as we know today, that there is going to be an apostasy before the Lord's return, does that have to include you? Apostasy means rebellion in the 2 Thessalonians 2. There's going to be a turning away. Yes, I see that happening, but that doesn't mean I have to be part of that. I can be an exception. I can be different. And so can you. And of course, we find that as believers in Jesus, we find that the main idea of Deuteronomy really is to show Jesus you love him by serving him with thanks. That's how I try to sum it up in an easy to understand way. What excites you most about being with the Lord Jesus Christ? The fact that your body won't be aging anymore? The fact that you could do a whole lot of fun things in heaven? Or that you love him, and that what makes heaven heaven is Jesus? And you want it, so therefore you want to serve him now with a thankful heart. That's what I want to be known as, one who was thankful and not a disgruntled servant of the Lord. Oh yeah, I remember Dr. Rick, the guy complained about everything, you know. He did it, but he complained about it, you know. I don't want people saying that about me. I want to be one who sets an example with in service and in thankfulness, and especially in love for the Lord. And I know you do as well. Otherwise, you wouldn't put up with hearing me teach through these various books of the Old Testament, you know? So, in terms of where it meets the road for us, applies to us, true obedience is based on love, not on legalism. True obedience is not shown in following all the right and the wrong things that everybody says you're supposed to do. Even following all the things that we find in the Bible. Does that sound just absolutely heretical? I'm thinking of the story of the prodigal son. You know, which one obeyed the father? Which of the two sons? It was really the older son, wasn't it? The younger son didn't obey his father. He squandered it all, etc. But which one really, truly loved is the father? The one who was willing to confess his own need for him. And I don't want to get off on the prodigal son, but I find it very instructive that the one who refers to himself as a slave was the older son. Here I have been, father, slaving for you all these years. He's a self-avowed slave. That's because his whole perspective is one of legalism. And he demonstrated little love for the Father. We demonstrate little love for the Father when we just get caught up in all the things we do for him. God's general rule is that blessing results from obedience, but problems result from disobedience. This is another thing that we need to grasp from the book of Deuteronomy. Here's where we need to understand the distinction between the Mosaic covenant and the Abrahamic covenant. God is going to fulfill his promises that he says to Abraham. It's going to happen. But guess who's going to be the ones that actually participate in that? The ones who trust him in faith, and they're the ones who are going to actually experience the blessings. You know, obedience is going to lead to a greater sense of blessing, but problems will result from disobedience. We'll see later on that there are books like Ecclesiastes that talk about some exceptions to this, but that's why I say this is God's general rule. Those who argue for prosperity gospel don't argue in generalities. It's absolute. You've got, you know, God is entitled to bless you with such and such amount of money if you give the prosperity teacher such and such amount of money, you know, that idea. Okay, that's the brief overview of the book of Deuteronomy. Okay, any of your questions about Deuteronomy before we... God only gave the Shema to his people in the Exodus? Yeah?
Because he was like,
Oh, okay. I don't think.
Yeah. I wonder, of course, you know, if you look at the Psalms.
So does the Shema, are you asking, does the Shema seem like an exception?
No, I just for the rest of the what was bounding the relationship, for instance, between Noah?
Well, before the giving of the law, people still had the moral law of God, where they knew many things that were right and wrong. And you see Genesis 6 talking about the sin of the world, but then it says, but Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. How did he do that without the law? He knew that there was truly one God. So Noah did not get caught up in idolatry.
Yeah, but then so it's the love of God that I didn't see in the earlier part of it.
Yeah.
You know, so and then I always wonder what was driving their relationship with God? You know, and I know now we are, you know, it's a God, His greatest commandment is for us to love Him, and out of that love stems love for others and obedience. But how did the earth go from?
That's a great question. How did they get the concept that they really needed to love the Lord prior to the Book of Deuteronomy?
Yeah.
Well, look, think about it. Going all the way back to Genesis 2, how did God show his love for Adam? Wow, a lot of ways, right? Gave them this phenomenal garden. Here's one thing he did we don't think about. He gave them something to do in the garden. I was talking about that to a man who was, I was counseling regarding work this past week. And he was kind of looking at work as the curse or something like that. And I said, work's not the curse. It's the ground that was cursed after that. He gave Adam something to do. And I pity the man who doesn't have something to do. If you know someone like that, bring them my way, okay? I'll counsel them. I'll say, hey, I got plenty of things to do for you. So that's what I did with my friend. I said, you speak Bahasa Indonesia. Well, let me give you some stuff to translate. You don't have anything to do. You know? God loved Adam by giving him this beautiful garden. Everything was provided for him, but he also had things to do there. That was a sign of God's love. God loved him by showing him his need, because he had animal after animal brought before him all day long, namings, you know, they all came in pairs, and it pretty soon became pretty evident. They're all in pairs. What about me? I mean, there's no pair here, you know. God loved him by giving him a sense of loneliness, and then once he sensed that, then he gave him Eve. You know, you see God's love all the way back to the beginning. It goes all the way back to Genesis 1:1. But if you look at the Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, I mean, I could go through like chapter by chapter, hopefully, and share about how each one of them is a demonstration of God's love. Well, no, he didn't. He did tell them how to respond back to him and many other, all the way back to Genesis 2:16. Do not eat from this tree. Look at all the trees I've given you. Look at all I've done for you. He didn't say it in the words of, demonstrate your love for me by being obedient to me. But he was saying, wow, you can express your love for me by obeying and experiencing all this bounty that I've given here in Eden for you. You know, you could go chapter by chapter and you'll see God's love all throughout the whole Old Testament. It doesn't start here in Deuteronomy. And if God's loving us like that, would not the right and appropriate response be back to love him? I would say that Abraham loved the Lord. You know, and most people around Abraham, they didn't understand that. They loved money. They loved sex. They loved power. They loved something else. Even Abraham's family. And Abraham had to set his face against all of that and really love the Lord and follow the Lord. He didn't do it flawlessly. He had faults, and we all do. But you could trace the love of God all through Genesis. Exodus, how does God show his love? He goes and reaches these people and delivers them out of slavery. And then he gives them his laws. Leviticus, how does God demonstrate his love? How do they demonstrate their love back to the Lord? They live a separated lifestyle from the pagan nations, and they end up benefiting greatly for it, because disease didn't run rampant throughout Israel and destroy the whole nation like it did with other nations when they followed the Levitical laws for purity, for mold, for all kinds of other things that they actually, that was more looking to the future. But the love of God's all over the place. And our response to him, to love him, that's what they didn't do in Numbers. They didn't love the Lord to trust him, to bring them into the land. It's implied that they should have loved him like that. I think it's there, but I agree with you that it's not explicit. Love the Lord. And you see that in the ministry of Jesus. How many times did Jesus tell his disciples that he loved them? Maybe once or twice, I think, if I remember correctly. And how many times did he tell them that they needed to love him? You know? It's not a huge emphasis using the very words love, but we demonstrate our love, we show our love often by not saying it. I wrote this poem to my wife. I was just reading. I have it in my office there 15 years ago. I found that I told my wife that I love her, I don't know, 15, 20, 30 times a day probably. But it isn't often followed up with the right action. And I found that she told me verbally less that she loved me. But then she always followed up with such great action. So I wrote in the poem, you know, I say it and then blow it. You don't say it, but show it. You know? And then this morning when my wife just kind of out of the blue just said, I love you, it dawned on me, you know, I think she might be telling me actually that she loves me more than I love her. I think she's beating me now. I need to catch up on this, get up to the 40 times a day or whatever, you know what I mean? But the verbalizing of it, that is not what the Shema is about. It doesn't say verbalize your love for the Lord. It says love him with heart, soul, mind, strength. And that's how it's... And Deuteronomy is, 36 chapters, basically how to love the Lord, and how to put it all together. Oh wow, yeah, that's a great question. Thank you so much. So we have made our way from Sinai to Kadesh Barnea, 40 years in the wilderness, and up to Moab. And the book of Deuteronomy, in the Hebrew text, the name of the book is, these are the words. That's the first word translated. These are the words that Moses spoke. So this whole book is Moses actually preaching his message to help the people truly love the Lord. They have already been on the east side of the Jordan. They've had victory, which we didn't cover. I went over it too quickly in Numbers 21. But Deuteronomy 1:4 says, this took place after he had defeated King Sihon of the Amorites. So Sihon was defeated in the southern part of the eastern region of the Jordan River. And Og of Bashan, who ruled up in the north, who ruled in Ashtoreth and Edrei. These two kingdoms had been defeated, and actually 2.5 tribes wanted to continue living in this area. and they asked if they could stay here. God said yes, as long as they go on over and defeat the land and do their part, because all 12 tribes had helped defeat these kingdoms of Og and Sihon or Sion. So it's only fair that these 2.5 tribes that stay on the east, that they ought to send their men over and help the rest of them defeat and get their inheritance as well. So they're about to cross over to Jericho. They're about to leave east of the Jordan River, and Jericho, this fortified city, was looking at them in the face. Were they ready? Were they ready to actually do that? I think Moses thought, or God told him, no, they're not ready. Their parents renewed, their parents committed to the covenant, Exodus 19. They said, before the giving of the Ten Commandments, yes, we'll do everything in this ceremony. But their children, 40 years later, have not made such a commitment. And so, thus we have the renewal of the Mosaic Covenant, and that's why I have renewal as the key word for the book. What God has done, what God expects, and what God will do. The book has so much to say in it. Just a couple things in our last few minutes here. It has what is called the suzerain vassal format, which is I'm jumping here to slide 67 for those of you looking on your computers. Page 149 talks about how the ancient Hittites had a form in their treaties with nations that they conquered, where they were the Hittites were the greater nation and the other nation they conquered. They would have a covenant that had 6 parts to it. A preamble, hey, that's exactly what we find in Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy is actually using that same structure. A historical prologue, where God says in like manner in Deuteronomy, hey, this is the relationship we've had up to this point. The general stipulation, which we've already seen, is to love the Lord. And then the specific stipulations, okay, if you love the Lord, here's a whole bunch of other things that you're going to do to show your love. And we find those in Deuteronomy 12 to 26. And then the Hittite treaties called on divine witnesses. Oh, I call on the sun god, the moon god, all these gods as witnesses of this treaty. Well, God's not going to do that. There are no other gods. So we find God calling on heaven and earth. 4 times in the book, he calls on heaven and earth to witness this treaty. And then the last part, in the general sense, is the blessings and cursings. These are results for obeying the treaty or results for disobeying the treaty. And you find those in Deuteronomy 27, 28, especially 28. And then there's a covenant summary, 29 to 30, and then the transition. So once he gives all of the various commands, I'm going to skip all the way to the end of the book. Near the end of the book. Once he gives the various commands and he tells the people that they need to follow the Lord, they meet in chapter 27 on Mount Ebal and Mount Gerizim with the city of Shechem in between. He tells them this is what they're supposed to do when they get to Shechem. They're still on the east side. They're supposed to have a ceremony to admonish the law. They're supposed to put some of the tribes, 6 of the tribes, blessing tribes on Mount Gerizim, and 6 cursing tribes on Mount Ebal. God told them which ones are the blessing tribes, which ones are the cursing tribes. And then he told them what they're supposed to do. And Deuteronomy 28 is frankly one of the most important chapters in the scripture. Because he tells them, if you obey all the words of this instruction, these will be the blessings that you will experience. Deuteronomy 28. your towns and your fields will be blessed. Well, that makes it easy to know where to live, doesn't it? Should you live in the town or should you live in the rural parts? Doesn't matter. You're going to get blessed. Your children and your crops will be blessed. Verse 4. In fact, your fruit baskets and bread boards will be blessed. You're going to have plenty of food. Wherever you go, whatever you do, you'll be blessed. Verse 6. Your enemies will attack you from one direction, but they'll scatter in seven different directions. In other words, you're going to have victory over your enemies. You will lend to many nations, but you'll never need to borrow from them. You're going to have plenty of money. Those are the blessings up to verse 14. When you get to verse 15, however, if you do not obey the Lord your God and do not carefully follow all these commands and decrees I'm giving you today, all these curses will come upon you. Your towns and your fields will be cursed. Uh-oh. Doesn't matter where you live, whether you're living in the city or out in the countryside, you're going to be cursed if you disobey. Your children, crops, baskets, wherever you go, whatever you do, you'll attack your enemies from one direction, but you will scatter from them in seven. Verse 25 is parallel to verse 7. They will lend money to you, but you'll not lend money to them. You won't have the money. The parallels between the individual blessings and cursings are just too obvious. In fact, he says, you will be sent into exile. And you should have Deuteronomy 28 written down there. So when anyone asks, well, why are we being sent out of the land? You can say, this was written hundreds of years ago by Moses. And he told us that we would actually get kicked out of the land. But when you get to the next chapter, you see that there is covenant renewal. And what we had seen before in the Abrahamic covenant about the land and the seed and the blessing being promised to Abraham, that land aspect is actually amplified more when we get here to Deuteronomy 30. When all these blessings and cursings I've set before you come to you and you take them to heart wherever the Lord your God disperses you among the nations, he says they are going to be dispersed, okay? And when you and your children return to the Lord your God and obey him with all your heart and all your soul according to everything I command you today, then the Lord your God will restore your fortunes from everywhere he scattered you, and he's going to bring you back. Verse 5, he'll bring you to the land that belonged to the Lord to your fathers, and you'll take possession of it. And the Lord will circumcise your hearts and the hearts of your descendants so that you may love him with all your heart. He's promising that the people would be brought away from the land and they'll be brought back to the land. So the land promise that was given to Abraham is promised here again in greater detail. But he's saying they're not actually going to be able to be in that land until after they're sent away from the land. God's going to then bring them back to the land. That raises up the question, well, when did that happen or when will that happen? Well, notice, when they come back, they'll be believing. Their hearts will be circumcised. They'll be all believing in the Lord. In fact, we see back in Genesis 17, verse 8, that land is going to be theirs forever. That tells me that there is not really a full restoration back to the land. I think that we're going to, that is happening even now as we see God bring more and more people from Israel back to the land, even today. This will set a foundation for understanding where this will be referred to many, many times in the rest of the Old Testament. So I'll defer our comments more about that. We'll look back at Deuteronomy 28 and we'll look back at chapter 30 as we make our way studying through the Old Testament.